quick note before we start, this podcast has a language warning, because of course it does. You Look Like Me, a podcast making sense of the life and families of donor-conceived people. From shady secrets to life-changing discoveries, this is a place for our stories.
So I'd grown up an only child, and really all I ever wanted were siblings.
Anne and I just proceeded from that point thinking we were sisters.
Hey, I just got my results and I'm looking at them, and I would see you if we matched, right?
This lore just fell away from under me and I was completely in the dark.
It's sad that like one of the most exciting events that happened ended up just being this like total false match.
Welcome to episode 5 of the second season of You Look Like Me. I'm Louise McLaughlin. In the final episode of this series, I meet my newest half-sibling.
Oh my God, again, here we are again.
And I reflect on everything I've learned so far, the biological links I've discovered, and the clues I now have as to how many half-siblings may be out there.
But actually, although I donated in 2 clinics, they then sold my sperm on to other clinics.
And I speak to people who thought that their own search for a half-sibling had come to an end, only to discover that they weren't related at all.
I'm in Colorado, USA.
Colorado? Oh my God, I've always wanted to go. Whereabouts in Colorado?
I'm in Boulder, so it's a little bit out of the capital, Denver, but right near the mountains, beautiful city.
Gorgeous. I'm speaking with Sarah. She's 20 years old with 20 confirmed half-siblings. I originally found Sarah's story in a Facebook group. She posted the night she realized that her half-sibling match probably wasn't correct.
Geez, tonight I found out that one of my half-sisters actually isn't related to me. I matched with her on the DSR back in August. We look similar, so I never questioned it, but tonight she got her 23andMe results back, and we didn't match. Part of me was worried this would happen with someone at one time or another, but I'm sad it had to be her.
The last sentence of it kind of hits home for me, because I remember my first sibling match.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was such a precious, like, it was inconceivable, really, because I had just built it up in my head for so long that when it happened, I was like, holy shit, something's going to take this away from me. And that was just a fear that, you know, it seemed illogical, but it really sat within me. And then you have this sentence at the end of the post saying, part of me was worried this would happen with someone at one time or another, but I'm sad it had to be her.
Yeah, that definitely still holds true for me. Like, I don't know, this world is so crazy with all of the like fraud and the crazy law, like lack of laws and whatever, that, you know, I was expecting to eventually have something crazy and rocky happen. But yeah, I was definitely really, really sad that like hers was the relationship I lost. Yeah.
Let's go back in time a little bit. Sarah was told she was donor conceived around age 3 or 4. She says it was never really a huge deal, but that she always wanted brothers or sisters.
I grew up as an only child, and I don't know, I always like really wanted my parents to have another kid or to adopt or just do anything. I was desperate for a sibling. Once I realized that there was this, you know, hypothetical family that I had out there, I was pretty excited to just see what I could find. I kind of just got sent down that path, and like I did everything. I signed up for the DSR. I messaged like everybody that I could. I did like this, all this stuff, just because I was like so excited.
Okay, for context, DSR is short for Donor Sibling Registry. Its website says it was founded to assist individuals conceived as a result of sperm, egg, or embryo donation who are seeking to make mutually desired contact with others with whom they share genetic ties. For clarity, it's not a DNA database. They rely on identifying data and information, such as donor numbers. In that vein, the potential matches are only as accurate as the information uploaded.
There are, I think, 10 listings under my donor number there. And 7 of them were posted like pre-2009 and no one has like logged in or updated them since. And so I really have no idea like what the deal is with those people. And because it's a paid subscription, there's a very likely chance they'll never come back to update that again. So I signed up in October of 2019. I made a posting. I drafted up a generic message and I sent it to everybody who I matched with that was just like, hi, I'm Sarah. You know, I'd love to talk with you. Here's my email address. And no one opened it or read it for months. And so I assumed that these were all just inactive accounts who, once again, just didn't pay for the subscription lifetime. And, you know, after a few weeks went by, I was kind of tired of the radio silence. So I took what little information I had through my like donor profile, and then I actually cross-referenced it with all of my ancestry matches and like intensively Facebook stalked my way until I tracked down who my bio dad was, because I did match with him, but all I had were his initials. I found who he was, and then I just sat on that information. Like I didn't do anything with it for ultimately like a year and a half, but I was just wanted to know who he was. Fast forward a few months, COVID hits, March 2020, and kind of like out of the blue, I'm assuming everyone was just bored and on the internet, and someone happened to log back into their DSR account after years, and I randomly out of the blue, I get a message that's like, hi, you messaged me a long time ago. I think I'm your half-brother. Would love to chat. Ultimately, somehow him becoming active, he messaged other people, got other people looped in. And there was, so it was this whole little chain reaction. And within like 24 hours, we were having a Zoom call with like 7 siblings. It was really weird and really cool. You know, I went from not knowing who anyone was to like talking with them just in a span of a couple of hours. Yeah, that was kind of how it started. It was just me and 4 or 5 others. And most of them weren't particularly interested in having a close relationship. That's kind of the general theme with my sibling pod, is there's like 2 or 3 who are really friendly and nice and awesome. 2 of my brothers did end up flying out over separate summers and meeting me, and we hung out for like a week here in Colorado. So those are the 2 that I'm arguably the closest with. And the rest are pretty just like, I'll respond if you text me, but I'm not going to like go out of my way to text you, you know?
Sarah's sibling matches began to ramp up, but she was still hoping for that one that was as enthusiastic about the discovery and forming a relationship as she was.
That September, so September of 2020, I got a message on the DSR out of nowhere, and she was like, hi, I matched with you. I literally just found out like 2 hours ago that I was donor conceived, and I immediately went here and signed up. And I just turned 18 and my parents decided to like tell me on my 18th birthday, and like this was the whole thing.
Quick side note from me. Do not tell your kid on their 18th birthday or any birthday.
And I'm like, wow, dramatic day for you. That's crazy. But, you know, I told her, you know, about the situation. I was like, yeah, we have, you know, this group of people and we're pretty sure that we figured out who our bio dad is. But like none of us have done anything with that information. It's just there. And she was super friendly. And I was like, honestly, so excited because, like I said, a lot of my siblings are kind of apathetic to the whole situation. And so to have her come in, and she was so friendly and so nice. And she was just like, oh, my God, let's all be besties. Like, you know, it was really, I was excited.
How big was your kind of active sibling group at this point?
I think we had a group chat with maybe like 8 of us. And it was really in an inactive group chat, like very rarely. It was kind of like, oh, hey, we got another sibling, and then no, nothing for 4 months. And then, oh, we got another sibling. That's kind of how it goes. But, you know, her coming in, she was very friendly. And so the group chat actually did pick up quite substantially for a few weeks to a few months. She was really nice and it was great. And then like for Christmas that year, she bought all of us these little like keychains. That's like a puzzle piece with the donor number on it. And I was like, oh my God, that's so cute. It was just like a very sweet, wholesome experience to have with her. And she gets for Christmas a DNA kit. She gets a 23andMe. She takes this 23andMe kit and then gets her results back. And she calls me like the night she gets her results back, and she's like, hey, I just got my results and I'm looking at them, and I would see you if we matched, right? And I'm like, yeah, no, I'd probably be right at the top, blah blah blah. You'd see this little profile picture, and she's like, yeah, I see a bunch of matches and none of them are you guys. And we were like, oh shit, that's oh man. And you know, I didn't really know what to say, because like, what do you say? This person that we've become relatively close with just all of a sudden goes back to being a stranger, you know, who we literally have no link to at all, except for this internet mistake.
So talk me through, like, she messages you and she goes, oh, you guys aren't there on the website where I would expect to see you. Like, at what point do you go, because there's presumably a few minutes where you're like, oh, you know, something's wrong on the website, or she's clicked something wrong. Like, when does the penny drop? And talk me through that.
I believe so, you know, she called and she's telling me that she's not seeing me, so then I pull up my phone and I'm looking for her and I'm not seeing her, and then we're both kind of like, oh, what does this mean? And I think we even had one of my other siblings pull up their 23andMe to confirm that she wasn't there. And yeah, sure enough, like, that sibling could see me, but not her. And just, it was kind of like, well, something happened. She called the clinic. She called California Cryobank. She tried to sign up for their registry system and do all this stuff, and was getting like totally stonewalled at everything. They were just saying, no, like, we have to get your parents to do it because they're the ones who signed all these contracts, or we don't have any record of your mom using donor 3425. And then she got in contact with one of her matches and they were like, oh yeah, that is the donor that my parents used. So she figured out what number it actually was. Turns out her parents had, I don't know, somehow through all of this crazy fertility mess, gotten the profile they actually used mixed up with one that they had been looking at. And so the, like, our number is 3425 and hers ended up being like 3311 or something. So like really close, but not the same. And yeah, it was just like this whole thing, and it just really sucked because none of us really wanted that to be true. I really like tried to be like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, once she found out and went on this little journey to find out who her like actual bio father is and found some half siblings through, you know, 23andMe, things died down. And, you know, we still follow each other on Instagram and all that stuff. But I just, yeah, things just weren't the same after that. And it made me really sad because she was the first one who was like genuinely like really excited and happy to be talking with all of us. And total tangent, but if I can go back in time a little bit, back when she first like found us in September of 2020, you know, I gave her this information about like our bio father, and she was like, okay, cool. And then like 2 days later, I get a phone call from her completely out of the blue, and she's like, so I did something kind of crazy, and I messaged our father last night. And I was like, What? After me sitting on this information for a year and a half, you're the one that's gonna go do this? Okay. And so yeah, she messaged him on Facebook, I guess, and he responded and was like, oh my gosh, wow, this is so crazy. I didn't think I'd ever hear from any of you guys. And you know, was plenty friendly, but ultimately kind of made it clear where the boundaries were between his family and us, which was a little hurtful, but also kind of understandable. Mixed feelings. But she was the entire reason that we ever like really got in touch with him, because I mean, for all I know, I would have just continued to sit on that information and never act on it. And ultimately it was her starting that conversation that, you know, led to me knowing him, led to me knowing on that side of the family, like my uncle and my great aunt and like all this other stuff. And then to ultimately find out that she's not even related to him at all. I think she told him, like, she texted him, oh yeah, just FYI, like, I'm not your daughter after all. Sorry. but it's just, I don't know. It's sad that like one of the most exciting events that happened in like my donor conceived sphere ended up just being this like total, you know, false match.
You were saying that you've been looking for this connection for so long, and then she was the one who kind of ticked the box of like enthusiasm, and you just felt like you were growing that bond.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that in a sibling since, or are you still looking?
I think I have it in those two brothers that I talked about. One of them is like super energetic and eager, so he definitely is. He's a lot, but he's a lot of fun too. And then the other one is a lot more chill, but we text pretty frequently. That's just like, oh, hey, I saw this meme or whatever, made me think of you. And even though, I don't know, I wish that we had known each other when we were just a little bit younger and we didn't have the social inhibitions that would have kept us from just being more talkative with each other. Because, I don't know, that comes with adulthood, is you don't want to bother someone else who has a full-time job, and you don't want to like just come off as weird and brutally honest and be like, oh, this is me. But I feel like had we met even just like 2 or 3 years prior, some of that would have come naturally just from being less mature, but then getting to mature with each other and know each other in that way. So even though I'm grateful for what I have with the siblings that I know, I do wish that, I don't know, we'd had a chance to get closer sooner, or even just live closer. So there's, I don't know, a way to build that bond just from physically existing in the same space. But for now, this is good too. I'm still getting a new one every couple of months. Who knows, the next one might be around the block, right?
Recorded anything in a while, just because a lot of stuff has been happening and it's felt really in flux. Updates: we matched with a new half sibling maybe 3 weeks ago. She's younger than me. I don't know why. My head is telling me she does not know she's donor conceived.
I'm in my London flat in the beginning of 2023, and we're trying to figure out what to say to our newly found half-sibling. A few weeks earlier, Biogrand Sandy had noticed a new ancestry match. I won't bore you with the logistics of reaching out to a new match when there's already 5 people in the BioFam WhatsApp group, but let's just say it all turns into a bit of a mini democracy, where everyone has to vote on what to say, how to say it, and who should be the one to say it.
It's a weird juggle now because there's so many of us, you know, 3 half siblings, bio dad, bio gran, which is just so weird because I had no one.
Not for the first time, I was a little concerned about the podcast. If she'd found it, she'd be thrown right into the deep end. And I wasn't sure how listening to it all might impact someone who had literally just learned that they were donor conceived.
I've never matched with a sibling who doesn't know that they're donor conceived. And obviously the more who come in, the more likely I guess that's going to be that that could happen. And I've spoken to a lot of people on the podcast who have kind of told me they've dealt with it, and kind of how they have approached it in the past. But I'm really nervous. That is just so much to take in. And I know I've like jokingly said before, oh, the podcast is here and, you know, it's a lot of information. But fuck me, it is a lot of information.
While Jess and I are talking a potential message through, I get a message in my ancestry inbox. Hi, Louise. I see we're related. It's all a massive shock.
Okay, so yeah, I don't think she knew.
I replied saying that I was donor conceived and happy to chat. Over the next few days, I added Vicky to the wider sibling group chat, and then the one with Neil and Biogran. She was feet first into the madness. In some ways, my story matched Vicky's. I hadn't always known that I was donor conceived, like our other siblings had. But I had taken years to come to terms with it all. And here she was, not only with the new revelation that she was donor conceived, but with 5 new close family matches. I thought back to when I'd matched with Jess. It was just me and her on the site. Briefly, the lack of any other matches in common made us both half-jokingly, but also not jokingly, ask, was there any way that the results might be wrong? It was far-fetched, unfounded, and unlikely. A result of 2 similarly strong brains catastrophizing after years of looking for a match. But maybe the thoughts that I had briefly back then are why I empathize so deeply where false matches have actually happened. Why those stories have lived in my brain for so long. Back when I'd only just started this podcast, another story caught my attention.
Thank you so much for being here and sharing your story. I've wanted to cover it for so long.
I'm on a 3-way video call across 2 continents.
Because it's just crazy that it can happen and also completely heart-wrenching.
I'm speaking with Fiona, who's in Australia, and Anne, who's in Ireland. Theirs is such an incredible and complex story because it involves false matches and fertility fraud. But all the more strangely, it started with astrology.
I live, in the southwest of Ireland, so in a tiny village, so nothing happens here in winter.
Back when Anne was in her 30s, a client of hers in Ireland offered to read her astrology charts. They sat down for a few hours, but it's what he said as he left which would change the direction of Anne's life.
He said, okay, well, it's quite obvious that your mother has a secret and it's time you knew what it was. My mum phoned, maybe later that day, and I said, do you have a secret? I was just met with this silence on the phone. So my mum told me that, in fact, my dad hadn't been able to have children and they had used a sperm donor. She'd gone to a private clinic with a Dr. Walker, who had delivered me as well.
That doctor's full name was Dr. Tony Walker. The South African fertility doctor had taken his own life when Anne was around 2. That had prompted Anne's mum to return to the clinic, where she was told that instead of using sperm from donors, Dr. Walker had exclusively used his own.
I think he treated over 200 women or something. So I'd grown up an only child, and really all I ever wanted were siblings. So my first thought was, okay, there are going to be hundreds of us out here. How do I find them?
Anne learned that Dr. Walker had written a couple of novels under a pseudonym. In a bid for answers, she found the books online, and in the review section, she left a message.
I think Dr. Walker was my father. He was running this secret clinic. If anyone knows anything about it, this is my email address.
It would be nearly a decade before Anne got a reply, when, on the other side of the world, Fiona did an unrelated online search for 2 novels written by her godfather, Dr. Walker. Fiona says she went numb when she read the messages.
He also helped my mother to get pregnant. He treated her for each of her 3 pregnancies with my dad. But he was my godfather. I didn't think anything else there.
So for 50 years, he was your godfather. And then he was your biological. What was that like?
When all the pieces fell into place, it made a lot of sense. I mean, I still don't know why he chose me, because I wasn't the first one. And of course, I certainly wasn't the last one. There was a lot to him that I didn't know when I was a child. He only showed one side of himself. And he certainly had a lot of secrets.
I could get lost down this rabbit hole of Dr. Tony Walker and the relationship that he formed with Fiona under the banner of a godfather. Meantime, Anne and Fiona were now convinced that they were half-siblings.
Anne and I just kind of proceeded from that point, thinking that we were sisters. We did a DNA test as well, but it was before Ancestry and 23andMe were popular. So we did a private DNA test, which wasn't conclusive.
Conclusive or not, they spent the next 4 years getting to know each other better and celebrating their newfound sibling bond.
We spent a lot of time talking to each other and emailing, and we built a really a really strong relationship.
Especially in those early days, I think we were just so glad to have each other as someone who you were connected to in this way and were sharing this experience with.
In 2018, an ancestry test linked Fiona to more half-siblings living in the US, whose parents were also treated by Dr. Walker. The siblings all decided to meet. But just before they were all due to fly out to meet Fiona in Australia, Anne did her own DNA test. And she didn't match with any of them. None of the new half-siblings, and not even Fiona.
I think that was probably the worst point for me because, you know, we'd been through all of this, we'd been through it together and found each other. And then, you know, we were all going to meet and then suddenly the sort of floor just fell away from under me and I was completely in the dark as to where I'd come from.
After a scramble for clarity, they were able to talk to some other former staff at Dr. Walker's clinic. And it turned out that while he did use his own sperm for a lot of his treatment, he didn't do it for all of them. Anne's search had to start all over again.
I mean, it was absolutely devastating because I think through Fee and the others, we were a very strong group as well. And it made sense of everything. It created a cohesiveness and something that in a way made it all worthwhile, that, you know, that there was this weird story, but we'd all find each other. And I think they've all been really nice to me and they've kept me in as a sort of adopted sibling in the
honorary member
in the brothers and sisters group. But I definitely felt very, very alone at that stage. And on my DNA matches, I had no information then to find out who my father had been, and my closest DNA matches were fourth, fifth cousins. So it was really like looking for a needle in a haystack, and it took me a couple of years of working at it several hours a day every day to eventually finally get the answers. I was on my computer all the time trying to work out these family trees, trying to work out connections. I was quite obsessed with finding out where I came from.
Anne would eventually get those answers. She discovered a biological father who, like Dr. Tony Walker, had passed away quite young. And she found three half-brothers. Just before COVID closed the world down, she flew out to South Africa to meet them.
I had to get an emergency flight home on the St. Patrick's Day, and was it 2020, as all the airports were just closing behind me. But to be able to meet them, there's something really profoundly important about it.
In a way, Anne has now got two sibling groups, her new DNA-confirmed half-siblings and her group with Fiona.
I think we're both really lucky that we did get to the closure in the end. My heart really goes out for the people who are left not knowing. I think the sad thing is that, in both our cases, there probably are others. You know, we probably do have other brothers and sisters that we'll never meet.
Like so many of us, I have no idea how many half-siblings I have. I have no idea how many I'll find during my lifetime. I have no idea how many are out there who will never cross my path. My most recent match means that my transformation from only child to youngest sibling has morphed once again. I now exist in the dreaded middle child realm. And although so far I don't mind this, the internet and memes have led me to believe that this is the worst sibling ranking. I've only met Vicky once since we matched back in December. We don't look that alike, and we've lived very different lives. But she's bubbly, funny, and quick-witted. And there were moments that I did really see myself in her. Like me, she also seems to have no issue with jumping semi-blindly into things that would scare a lot of other people.
Who was the first guest to arrive?
The girls met at the station and we walked over.
The girls? All three of you?
All three of us, yeah.
Where was Johnny? Sperm sisters.
The reunions are getting bigger. Just weeks after discovering that she was donor conceived, Vicky met all of her half-siblings and her bio dad Neil on the same day. Like the first time I met Jess, I arranged to meet Vicky in a train station. But this time, as I walked to meet her, Jess was by my side.
Oh my god. Again, here we are again. Where is she? Inside, outside.
I'm not normally one for believing in signs from the universe, but I will say when my new half-sister and I turned up wearing the exact same coat, down to the same size, I did have a moment.
The same coat on, almost. It's like,
Jewish, very similar. Is your favourite
Is that the exact same pocket?
Are you serious?
That's the same coat.
Later, I lost it again when it turned out we both have a remarkably similar tattoo in the same place. Language warning coming up.
What's this tattoo? I love it. Are you fucking shitting me?
Don't tell me you've got the same bloody tattoo.
I have a rose and lace tattoo on my leg right here.
Do you?
Get it out.
And then just like that, we were in our half-brother's home and the whole group was together for the very first time. It was a day spent asking the important questions.
Okay, so my question, my get to know you question, like the question for a dinner party when you don't want to do like the small talk. Vicky.
Youngest first.
If you had to hide a giraffe, a live giraffe.
Right, okay.
Where would you hide it?
I don't think a good idea.
No, you have to hide it.
How long do you have to hide it for?
A day. Forever. For its lifespan.
Oh, wow.
For the giraffe's lifespan.
That's really close. This is just hiding my work. It's probably the biggest place that I can think of right now.
Neil, where would you hide it? Where would you hide the giraffe?
I'd hide it amongst lots of other giraffes.
Yes! That's the best. Yes, someone said the zoo. I think that's an excellent idea. Just fuck it in the zoo.
Yeah.
I want to pull back for a second. Having us all together was amazing and surreal and weird and awkward, but there are even more questions now. All four of us are from four separate clinics in London. Neil insists that he only ever donated to two. That means his sperm was shared out without his knowledge.
Louise has identified that actually, although I donated in two clinics, they then sold my sperm on to other clinics. And I don't know what sort of regulations and rules.
So they must have just been covering their costs, because they paid you.
Not very much.
£15!
Yeah, £15.
Yeah, but they must
like
have
that.
Sold it on for more than 15 quid.
You might remember earlier I said I wasn't sure if Vicky had found the podcast before she reached out. It turns out she had, but so had someone a bit more unexpected.
It's alright. My mum found your podcast the other day.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And I was like, why are you listening to that? She went, oh, because I'm learning about donor-conceived children and stuff like that. I was like, do you know that's my half-sister that you're listening to? She was like, no, it's not. I was like, yes, it is.
I adore that Vicky's mum jumped onto this as a resource. I love that so many of you who have reached out to me over the years are parents who have used a donor and want to hear our side of the story. There's a whole community of us now who want to do better and want to learn from our own mistakes and the mistakes that others made before us. I'm still learning. I'm still learning how to allow myself to fully lean into new biofamily relationships without carrying guilt. Even though my parents have been nothing but incredible and supportive since I started this journey. And that kind of brings me to the final line of this series. Hilariously, it's a tagline which I've been trying to come up with since I started this podcast back in 2020. So of course I only come up with it now, but I like it. And like most things on this journey, it's not perfect, but for me, it was worth the wait. So until next time, remember, this is your story, not your secret. And that's it for season two, but I will be continuing my offshoot series, Send This To. As always, thanks for coming along for the journey. I'm Louise McLaughlin. This podcast was written and hosted by me, Louise McLaughlin, and produced by Nathan Moore. If you want to support us, you can buy us a virtual coffee or a pint at ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/you-look-like-me. Or you can set up a recurring donation in an amount of your choice at patreon.com/you-look-like-me. If you can't remember those links, don't worry, you can find both on our Twitter page. That's all for now. Talk to you next time.